You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
We are live here on another episode of the A-Side Live Chat. It is, of course, Friday. I believe it's May. Yes, May 1st. So, first episode of May. Joining me this Friday is A.K. Lee of MMA Fighting, our cameraman and producer, Casey Lydon. And joining us this week, we've had many UFC and non-UFC fighters on the show in recent weeks. I know we've been trying to do this three times a week during quarantine time, but we haven't had a fighter on in a long time that actually has a fight scheduled since this pandemic started. So the man of the hour is, of course, UFC heavyweight contender Ben Rothwell. Ben, before we get into the fan questions, I first have to ask, how has life been in quarantine for you up in the great state of Wisconsin?
It's been a bit of a roller coaster ride just because I had to close my gym down. And just seeing all the people that have been affected by it. For me personally, it's not been so bad. Neo 2 came out right about when the quarantine started, so I jammed out on that for 2 weeks. And my training has been pretty good. I have a personal gym that's in my trainers and everybody's been able to come to me. And I've been able to use the MMA gym, you know. There's less than 10 of us. So life's been somewhat normal. But outside of that, just seeing the grocery stores and the public and see where everybody is, and it's pretty crazy. You know, just this is something that's never happened in our whole history. And hope you get the economy back soon. It's kind of scary.
Now, you do have a fight lined up. Has it been like you've mentioned, you're fighting, your life yourself has been fairly normal and you're in camp and you are able to train. But with everything you're witnessing going on outside of fighting, like you brought up the grocery stores, the real world is going through a pandemic, an MMA people may turn to for a distraction, but there nonetheless a thing going on in the world. Has it been difficult for yourself to focus on a fight camp during this pandemic?
The hardest part is I was supposed to fight one guy for mm-hmm. April 18th, you know, in the middle of March, pretty much. I knew ahead of time that Volante was from New York, and I'd called my manager and everybody. I'm like, I don't think this guy, he's going to be able to fight. And they're like, no, just stay ready. And then, he couldn't fight. He eventually said, there's no way. New York's like shut down. I can't train. So I wasn't mad. I was just like, you're going to find somebody. Then UFC canceled all the events. It's just a lot of limbo, but my manager was still like, you got to stay ready. They're going to try and do a show. And I'm like, how are they going to do a show in this? I got a call that they're going to do something in May. And I was matched up against Maurice Green. I was just like, whatever, it's a fight. Wasn't exciting, but it's a fight. And it was cool that the UFC was still going to try and do a show. So I was trying to stay focused. So luckily I kept training, but that fight fell through. And then just a week ago, matched up with OSP. At least I got a fight. I think it's a bigger fight than the other two, but it's been a roller coaster ride. Am I fighting? Am I not fighting? Three different opponents. Where am I fighting? That was the biggest thing, is where are these fights going to take place? So,
Ben, how weird is it when you got the OSP call? Because you must have seen that name, and you may be like, wait a minute, this guy isn't even in my division. Well, how did this name come up? So what was your reaction when you saw that it was a light heavyweight that was coming up to accept a fight with you?
I had already went through that with the first opponent from Volante.
Oh, Volante.
True. So I already went through all those emotions of these guys are moving up to heavyweight. They think the heavyweights suck. Or John Jones is beating everybody, running from him. So I kind of got over it. I see that guys like Daniel Cormier and, even go farther back, Randy Couture. I think they really open the door for guys in that weight class, that weight area, to fight wherever, up and down.
Why do you think that is? You said that these guys think that that the heavyweights suck. Why do you think that is? Why do you think that that these light heavyweights are kind of coming up and thinking that, I don't know if some of you guys are going to be easy pickings or what? Why? What's the deal with that?
Technically, from what I can see, it's what Dan, what why Curtis Blaydes is having so much success, and I feel like it's a wrestling, it's a ground, it's a jiu-jitsu thing. I feel like a lot of the heavyweights, it's the old rule of first heavyweight to get a takedown wins the fight. That was the old saying back in early 2000. I don't know if much has changed. I mean, you got your couple of guys that are okay, but I think for the most part, it's a speed factor. I feel like the guys at the 220, 230 feel like they have an advantage. They can go up or down, and they feel like, you look what Randy Couture did. You know what I mean? He was really good at getting his takedowns. He'd wear guys down. He could beat the bigger guy. And I think some of that stands true. But you got guys you got to be careful of at heavyweight. And, of course, there's always the power factor. I think all the heavyweights down the board bring a danger factor that doesn't exist in any other weight class. So,
do you think someone like John Jones, like people keep talking about him coming up? Do you think he'll have a lot of he himself has said he's worried about the stuff that happens at heavyweight. So I don't think he's overlooking the division. But when you see someone like him, do you think his skill set immediately translates and that he could, would be a favored fighter up at heavyweight?
I think wherever John Jones fights, he's John Jones. He's gonna bring a level. He's gonna bring a what's the word looking for? So I bring a lot of hype, you know what I mean? The guy has skills that can win anywhere. I feel like a guy like Tony Ferguson, Habib, I feel like these guys could win. They could beat guys bigger than them. I feel like this kind of exists everywhere. I think it's something Fedor always showed over the years. It doesn't matter your size. You're a badass, you're going to win a fight. You know, if somebody pushes your wife down in front of you, are you going to go, oh, what's your weight class? And give me a couple weeks to get ready. No, you fight. That's what a real fighter does. He'll win wherever against whoever it is.
Well, I think even looking back on your career, I believe you have fights against Chris Ostrosinski, Brandon Vera, like you brought up Vellante. Like you specifically, why do you think they match you up with these light heavyweights that want to come up or even heavyweights that eventually go back down?
In the past, I'm not sure. It just happened. Circumstances. I think that's kind of what it is now. Mm-hmm. This right now, especially, they had to find fighters in the United States, so that cut it down. They had a list of six heavyweights. We talked to five of them; they were injured, or didn't have enough time to get ready. Whatever it was, Maurice took the fight, then Maurice pulled out. So, I think it really just came down to OSB said he even had an idea. It was like, if you want to fight, this is the fight, and he. I think him and Vellante, I think it's a weight cutting issue more than anything. I think they're looking at, I just want to fight. I can fight whoever. I don't have to cut the weight. That's the biggest factor.
Yeah, but we had Sarah Kaufman on a few shows ago, and she was saying she hopes everyone fights higher up, considering when you cut weight, you're probably more susceptible to bacteria catching a virus or anything like that. So I think you're right on the money with that. But of course, this is not our show. This is the fan show. I'm sure they have a million questions for Ben. I don't know why this popped into my head, but you fought in IFL, if I'm not mistaken, correct? For a lot of fights. And just coincidentally, there was a long thread of fans' memories from the IFL. So before we get into the fan questions, I want to ask you specifically, because I have fond memories of watching the IFL. What were some of your fondest memories from competing in that organization?
15-second knockout of.
I was hoping you would say that.
I was actually going to post a video and be like, "I taught Conor McGregor how to beat Aldo," because it's very similar. Yeah.
That was not my ticket into MMA, but that got me back into it after a while. I love that promotion so much. So I'm actually even more happy to speak to you this episode. But Casey, our producer behind.
Oh wait, can I ask Ben? Go ahead. Ben. Were you involved at all with the IFL rap? I can't remember the video exactly, but I'm sure you've seen the IFL rap. Were you involved with that? Did you wish you were?
That video is so bad. I'm very thankful to not be a part of it.
Oh,
no, I forgot about that. Oh my gosh. But Casey, do we have the man behind the scenes? We have any questions for Mr. Ben Rockwell?
Yes, we do. Actually, I'm going to go to a YouTube question we got right now.
From Aaron Jackson, Ben, are you going to hit the go-go choke in your next fight? Yes, you are famous for the go-go choke. I believe you caught Josh Barnett and Matt Mitrione with that choke. So talk about the choke and how it's set up and everything. And to answer Aaron Jackson's question, are you going to hit it in your next fight?
It's all about opportunity, man. You know, it's what presents itself. You don't force a knockout, it happens. Chuck Liddell said it best. When you try to force a knockout, it never happens. So when it comes to you, you take it. The submission game's the same way. I don't force anything. I take what I'm given. That's usually when I'm fighting my best.
Casey, have you ever practiced the go-go choke yourself in camp or while you're training?
Right in these mats right here? No. I'm way too novice for such an advanced move. I remember we actually interviewed you, maybe it was after your Barnett win. I think we tried to ask you the same question. You were like, no, secrets. Those are secrets. But I think you threw it on, you might have put it on Ariel for like maybe like half a second just to kind of give him a taste of what these guys
are. They want a detailed explanation of how I do it.
Yeah.
Oh. Lowest piece is the guillotine. So that's crazy. Let's keep thinking that.
Have you seen anyone else use your signature choke since you started to implement it in the octagon, like an opposing fighter that maybe you're watching a fight and he had an opportunity, or if he actually hit it the right way?
I see lots of opportunities, but nobody knows. Luis is something Luis came up with. Hicks and Gracie asked Luis, "What is this?"
Wow.
That's pretty awesome.
Huh. Wow. So we have the Von Flew choke and the go-go choke facing off in the battle. Thank you, Aaron Jackson, for your question. I was hoping somebody would ask about that choke.
Actually, I want to ask about the Von Flew choke. To Ben, like, what makes OSP so successful in him landing that so often? Is it just his opponent's just not paying attention, or is it his body shape, or what do you think it is?
That's a big guy to have a shoulder put into your throat. So we've had the choke. We've been working on it. He gets people to commit. They don't know any better, and they try to go for a guillotine, or they put their arm around the back of his head. And if he locks it up, he says there isn't a way out. And I would like to show him. Ooh. Not in the fight. Afterwards, I'll show him. But it's brutal. If you don't know what you're doing, that choke's gonna end you. He's a big guy that he gets up on his toes and he puts that shoulder into your throat. And if you don't know what you're doing, which if you look at his last, the four guys that he caught in it, they didn't have any clue. He had Glover Teixeira in it pretty deep too, but Glover got his arm out and, reversed it and ended up winning that fight. But, even Glover, for a second, you could see it was like a look of surprise. Like, how did I get? Why am I here? How did I get here? So he's good at it. He's good. I see his setups. Definitely something to look out for.
Okay. All right. We got a question. Here we go.
From Jones Eats Cormier on the site.
Don't call me Benjamin. I'm crossing off this question.
That's a no-no. That's a big no-no. That's a big no-no.
My birth certificate says Ben, so I got to rep my name.
Wow.
Anyway, I forgive you.
So, hello, Ben. Which MMA fighter did you always want to fight but never got the chance?
Oh, boy. Right now, it's Stipe. I was supposed to fight Stipe. He got injured and it didn't happen. And it's a huge fight. It would have been a great fight then. He's kind of high ranked now, so it's going to take some work from me to get there. But that's the plan.
That was supposed to be on the Dublin card, if I'm not mistaken?
Sir.
Yeah. That would have been a banger.
Oh. A lot of people say, like, Fedor, that's usually the go-to answer, I think, for a lot of heavyweights. Any of those pride guys like Fedor come to mind, Ben, when you think about fantasy fights that could have happened?
sure, Fedor is a legend. And had I beat Andre Arlovski in Affliction, I was going to get the fight. I was going to get to fight him. So that's my fault. I blew it. I blew it, man. I choked against Andre two times.
Oh. Were you at that fight, Casey?
I was. I was at the Honda Center. That was when that was when Fedor fought Tim Sylvia.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I was at that.
So Ben, were you already kind of sizing him up? I mean, most I know, you know, you're a veteran. You probably try not to look ahead of your opponent. But was there that part of you that was like, because you said you knew if you'd beaten Arlovski, was there a little bit in your head thinking like, oh man, what if it happens and how would I match up that with Fedor?
Yeah, it was part of the plan always is look at the top guys, and that's who you got to imagine you're fighting. Mm-hmm. Don't look at chumps. So Fedor was always the measurement stick. You know, if you have to fight Fedor, how are you going to beat him? So you're always trying to figure that out. And it was, you got to be well-rounded, you know. And obviously, I think one of Fedor's weaknesses is bigger guys that were able to pass his guard gave him a lot of problems. So I would add been well-rounded when I fought him.
Mm-hmm. Do you put Fedor at the top of the list of greatest heavyweights ever? I know a lot of people kind of put Stipe and Kane and Daniel Cormier in that conversation, but for pretty much a decade,
Fedor is above Kane for sure. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to gun on the guy. That's always pissed me off that you give him so much hype. He fought Bigfoot Silva. He fought Junior Dos Santos, fought Bigfoot Silva in a period of what? It's like 5 years. It's something mm-hmm. just retarded. And he was the greatest heavyweight ever. It just blows my mind. Like, what are you talking about? Stipe, to his credit, has defended the belt more than anybody. That's, you know, the guy is up there. He's definitely earned his dues. Stipe's on his way. I think, on his way. He keeps going. He's going to be up there with Fedor. But Fedor, for you have to live in that time frame to understand that Fedor was the man. You know what I mean? That was for that period of time. Nogueira was the pride champion. You know what I mean? He was so back then. The pride fighters were the best, so to speak. And Fedor came in there and smashed him, smashed everybody, and went undefeated for a long, long time. So for the amount of years that Fedor held everybody off and was the champ and undisputed, you know, he's always gonna, definitely. One of, you know, all times. But right now, it's, I'd say, between Fedor and Stipe.
And where do you slot Daniel Cormier into that conversation? I know he's had a lot of success at light heavyweight, too, but he does have that knockout win over Stipe.
He's up there. I mean, he's up number three. It's a battle between him and Stipe if this third fight happens because they both got a win on each other. So Daniel's done some great things, too. I mean, he's up there.
Ben, I like that you gave such a fair, objective answer because you fought Kane. So I would have thought this was your opportunity to just go like, you know what? This is the guy I shared the cage with. This guy's the best. I don't think anyone would have blamed you if you had said that. I know some fighters, again, like, you know, like to say that they fought the best and, you know, just kind of not worry too much about guys that they didn't have the chance to fight. But you kind of you really gave a real answer there.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the question. Jones eats Cormier, and it's Ben, not Benjamin. Just a reminder.
That's a warning. That's a warning, guys. Yep,
Casey, don't says Benjamin from here on.
Yeah. We're gonna change your title, your graphic too. Yeah. Here we go. It's a question from YouTube comments
from Maria Gronin. After what fight were you the happiest, and why? Interesting question.
Mm-hmm.
Knocking off Szczesinski in 15 seconds. 15 really? Seconds. No, I'm just – one of my interviews recently, I think before Struve, I said I don't get happy very much. But I do like knocking people out. It does make me.
At what point in the process, kind of following over this long question, are you happy? Is it during I don't know. Would it be during training? Definitely not during weight cutting. But I mean – if you say when you knock people out, but like what else in the fight itself, do you consider yourself to be happy at all?
After the job's done, I'm getting my hand raised. That's the moment. That's all the blood, sweat, tears, you know, for that. No, nothing to get. I mean, I like, Brian Schaub, but that was an awesome knockout because it was such a critical time for me. I was in a really, really bad spot. Probably was getting in to get cut if I lost again. And not only was it a needed win, but man, did the memes that came out after were hilarious.
I don't think he can tweet anything with that without that GIF popping up beneath his mentions. He could be, I'm doing a stand-up in LA, so-and-so, and like one of the top mentions is always the GIF of you knocking him out. It's up there with whenever Bisping or Rockhold tweets something, it's always a battle between fans in the comment section. So you're in that rare group where no matter their opponent, even though you fought years ago, will be tied to them forever.
And that's what makes me like him even more, because he has all a reason to be hateful, and he's always super cool to me. He's always very respectful, and I gotta get like look with him though. He's I feel like he's being successful outside of fighting. So props to him. He's doing a great job. But that was a good one.
Thank you for the question, Maria Gronin.
He's gonna be like, how could you not talk about Alistair Overeem knockout? But I got moments, man. I got moments.
So what were your – so if no one's ever watched Ben Rothwell fight, and you need to give him three fights to really show them everything, like to define your fight career, what three performances or fights in general would you show
them? Alistair Overeem and Josh Barnett are two, just those two. Shows them a mixed martial artist. I submitted the best submission artist, a knocked out, a knockout artist. Those are the two fights.
Still the only fighter ever to submit Josh Barnett, which is pretty crazy. But that is the fact.
When I retweeted this, there was a question and it goes, hey, you said we've seen nothing yet. Have we seen it yet? Someone answered. I said that after I submitted Matt Matrione. I followed that up with submitting Josh Barnett, which no one had ever seen before. So there you go, buddy.
In that submission over Josh Barnett, didn't he just come up? He had that big win at Metamoris, if I'm not mistaken. So he was like declaring himself the Metamoris heavyweight champion of the world. And then right away, turnaround got submitted by you. Did he ever declare you the Metamoris heavyweight champion of the world?
No, but it was Dean Lister, I think, too, right?
Yes.
It was a big win. But Josh is, I've always, been super respectful with. It was a tough fight for me because it was like fighting like an older brother. But once the cage door shuts, eyes turn red, get it done.
Did you and Josh train together or just because you guys have been in the game so long?
Just in the game so long.
Yeah.
Cool. Tim Sylvia trained with him. Tim Sylvia actually said before we hadn't seen each other in a couple of years, but Tim was like, oh, Ben's in trouble. I'm going to get smashed. I was like, you fat fuck.
Wow.
That was a good F you to him, too.
No Josh, love for the mate.
Josh no loved love. Him. Like, they went and trained, and apparently Josh submitted him like 15 times in like 10 minutes. And so he was pretty scared of him.
No love for the maniac?
He had some good times, but I don't know. Mike T said something. Mike Sussanolovich, we used to all train together. He made some comments online. I'm not even a part of it. And Tim jumps on and starts talking shit about me. I'm like, what the fuck, dude? I didn't say anything about you, slob. We'll fall off the buff.
Oh, my.
Well, this is your chance to fire back. I'm glad that we had you on because, you should be able to defend yourself.
Is that someone you wanted to fight ever? Like when he was still fighting?
It did.
When did you fight? Oh, you didn't? When did you fight him? You had like 2 billion fights, man.
Three-round fight, man.
Wow. Oh, yeah. 2001.
I fought him. Get this.
2001?
I fought him in the Quad Cities where he was training at the local nightclub that he went to. And the three judges were his training partners. Thank you, Cox.
It was Ben's fifth career fight in Davenport, Iowa, August 2001. So don't blame you if you missed that one on the tapology sheet, Casey.
I had to scroll so far down to see that one. That was, oh my goodness. 2001.
And the things weren't recorded well back then. That was my eighth pro fight, and they don't. So I actually got a few more wins they don't know about.
Really?
Truth.
How many? Well, let's get. How many of your fights do you remember? I mean, if like, do you remember your amateur fight against Mike Hall?
I remember every single fight.
You do? Wow.
Yeah, you want me to tell you about that fight?
Please do. That was from. Okay, go for it. Sorry.
I come in. I'm 19 years old. I'm sorry. Sorry. Mike Hall was in Indianapolis or Fort Worth. Right. Sorry. I'm sitting here telling you I remember them all. I do. So it was a long drive because I was still in high school. That's right. It was my senior year. I was still in high school, and Ron Faircloth and Pat O'Malley drove me to it. I had to lie to my parents. They didn't know what I was doing yet. So we drive down there and we go to weigh-ins, and I'm scared because this is my second night of fighting. It's my third fight, second night of fighting.
Jesus.
So we get there and Mike Hall is weighing in, and we weigh in, and he's this big, he looks like Tank Abbott, but not as fat and as tall as me. So this is a 20-year-old dude. It's pretty scary. You know, I'm in high school. And we don't say anything. We weigh in and we go out to the parking lot, and his brother yells out the parking lot, "You're going to lose." I went, motherfucker. And I went my feet up. That's it. I ended up knocking him out in 17 seconds.
Wow.
Right? So 17 seconds.
It just has a win. It doesn't. There were no stopwatches back then.
It was 17 second knockout. I stopped around the cage, and then my reward was to fight this guy named Ron Faircloth. So, yeah, Ron didn't bring me because I had to fight Ron. So that's why I'm confused. I had to fight Ron that night. But at the time, Ron was a masonry worker, roided out of his mind. And before this show started, Ron came walking in, concrete falling off of his boots, dude, veins, dude, whatever. And I go to my buddy, and I go, I hope he's not in the tournament. He was, and the guy he was supposed to fight ended up having like a heart attack seizure. So Ron got a bye. So I knock out Mike Hall and then had to fight Ron, which I beat. Yep, there he is. We ended up becoming training partners after that fight.
God, man.
When you're 18
MMA. Years
old, guys, that man was scary, let me tell you.
MMA. I just want to say, unfortunately, Ben's fight, I was just quickly looking. Ben's fight with Tim Sylvia is not on YouTube. So we cannot judge for ourselves and do a little robbery review of the fight. But I will definitely take Ben's word for it that there was something fishy going on with the judging pool.
There was something fishy, but he won.
Hopefully.
Honestly, sure. Though, he won the fight. I'll give him. I mean,
okay.
You watch the whole thing. It just was stupid that I'm fighting a guy who's the judges are his training partners. You know, it was just such a bad time.
Bizarre.
Stupid. Guess how much they got paid for that 15-minute war?
$50.
$500.
A meal.
Come
on. Oh, I haven't heard that name in a while.
Yeah, $250, and he gave it to me, and he says, don't spend it all in one place.
And you fought Travis Fulton, right? If I'm not mistaken, you're one of the 4,000 people that's fought him. Can you believe he's still fighting?
Wow.
I think his last fight was in 2019.
Unreal. He's like a circus performer.
Oh yeah, there's an interesting article of him on The Athletic where they interview him and he's talking about fights he's had, like five fights in one night. There's like a story where he's fought in the same guy like 9 times because whenever his opponent falls out, he calls this guy saying, "Hey, 7 times the charm, man. Come on down to the bar." And then they just fight there and he wins every time. So that just goes to show you Travis Fulton right there. But man, good Lord, fought him twice. Do you remember both fights?
Yeah, the first one was in Racine, Wisconsin. I ended up putting him in a Kimura. And he, one of the rare times he didn't continue, said I hurt his arm. And that wasn't normal for him. And then I fought him in the IFL and I put him in a Kimura again. And he didn't want to tap this time. And I literally go, Travis, your arm's going to break, please. And then he finally tapped.
Jesus.
You said that to him during the fight? Like, you kind of like.
Yeah, I was like, had my face was right here. And I'm like, Travis, your arm's going to break, bro. I'm like, please.
Wow. Tap. So you're a nice guy in there.
Oh, man. But I mean, he was like the Iron Man. You know what I mean? There is a respect. Mm-hmm. I had him dead to rights. I knew he wasn't getting out, so I could say that. There's some situations you just gotta go for it. And the guy doesn't tap in time, it's unfortunate, but you gotta go for it. I had him in a situation where I was on top of him, he couldn't move. You know, I was in complete control, so I was able to do that.
Yeah, his career record right now is 255, 54, and 10. He has 104 knockouts and 143 submission wins. those numbers. He only has 8 decisions. Out of 255 wins, only 8 of them have reached the judges' scorecards.
And Ben, like you, he said he can remember the details of like every fight. So I don't know what it is about you guys. You guys who go like 50, 60 fights. I have no idea how you, or I mean him even more. I don't know how you guys remember that stuff. But I will say, fact checking, you are correct. Just for everyone out there, he did fight Travis Fulton the first time in Racine, Wisconsin.
Wow.
Steel trap.
I mean, his is more impressive. That's a lot more fights to remember.
He has more submission wins than fights I've covered live total. From Sports Week MMA, I would ask Ben when he said to John Anik that we have seen nothing yet, what did he mean by it?
He answered this, yeah.
Oh,
this
is the also, question he was up for. How annoyed was he that Anik didn't let him cut his promo and walk away, instead tried to ask him his bland question?
Listen, John Anik caught so much heat for that. Let's not bring him up no more. Let's put to bed. Let's let it sleep.
So. There you go. Hope we answered your question, Sports Talk.
All right.
Sports Week, for my sake. From Cam Kelly, hashtag the A-side, at Rothwell Fighter. Cowboy said he sometimes doesn't show up mentally come fight night. Is that something you've ever experienced? And is that feeling something you can train to overcome? Cheers. So, yes, for those of you who haven't heard, I'll set the scene a little bit. Donald Cerrone recently gave an interview to ESPN saying before his fight against Conor McGregor in January, he was not mentally there. Quote, didn't want to be there. Which actually echoed the comments that we had Brian Kelleher on the week after the fight. He fought on the same card and also shared a locker room with Cowboy Cerrone for that fight. And he said Cowboy looked like he wasn't even there when he was warming up. So Brian Kelleher called it in January. Cowboy Cerrone confirmed it months later. But Ben, to answer this, Cam Kelly's question, have you ever experienced something like that before a fight?
I've experienced something where I'm not myself. The last Andre Arlovski fight. Mm-hmm. We found out I had a lung infection. You know, they're making excuses. I don't make excuses, but it is what it is. I got diagnosed with a lung infection. They put me on all sorts of stuff after. I had to get x-rays and MRI of my lungs, all that. I wasn't myself. In the fight, I mentally wanted to be there. But your body is just not responding, and it sucks. So if something happens, you know, it's a scary place to be. You just can't be yourself, but you're in this cage. You got to do it. So I can definitely relate what he was feeling. You know, I don't know, mentally something could have happened. Dude, it's such a dice roll. You do all this training, and the night of the fight, something can happen. You don't put in the right vitamins and minerals, the things don't function, your body's low in magnesium. You know, that costs you a fight. It's definitely a scary thing to happen because you got to go in front of millions of people and put your ass on the line. But that question.
You know, the other. Go ahead.
What? Go ahead.
The other interesting thing Cerrone said was he kind of phrased it like, I wasn't Cowboy that night. And a lot of fighters have sort of spoken of like an alter ego, you know, when fight night comes around. Brandon Moreno recently, you know, the assassin baby, he recently said like, oh, I'm Brandon Moreno when I'm at home and when I'm training and when I go Baby 2.0, and I kind of tune out. Did you ever find any use for having sort of like a fight persona, like to separate yourself from, you know, your civilian life? You know, is there a difference between Ben Rothwell and Big Ben?
It's like a yes, no. I kind of like, I'm that all the time, but you can't be it. You can't do that because I'd be trashing society and I'd be nothing. So I've laid it out to my heart rate. When my heart rate breaks a certain level, I'm very different. And by fight night, once I get into the cage, I'm pretty sure my heart rate is around that. And I'm different. I speak differently. I'm just, my mind thinks differently. And I am like a different person. But I'm always that person. I don't try to kid. I don't lie to myself saying the split personality or anything. But there's like a switch. I think you've heard it in the past. We see there's like a switch. It's an intensity, you know. Right now, everything's got to be calm. And like I said, I use the incident, something out on the street. You know, when something happens, someone pushes your wife down in front of you, that switch, you know, there's like something goes on in your head. You're something else. You can't talk reasoning to me. My objective, there's one thing that's going to happen. And when I am that person in the ring, that's when I fight my best.
That's when the Big Ben comes out.
You had mentioned in your Andrei Arlovsky fight that you said like you were mentally there, but your body, physically, you might not have been able to perform the way you wanted to. For those of us who have never experienced that, I mean, those remind me of what Tyron Woodley said after his loss to Kamaru Usman. He said the whole time he was telling his arms, like, throw a punch, throw a kick, go for a takedown, but his mind and his body were not working together. Like, he was basically watching himself, telling him to do things, but his body wasn't reacting. So for some people who have never experienced like that, what's it like being in a fist fight and your body not being able to do what you want it to do?
A lot of bad emotions, let me tell you, because you're here and you're a fighter. You can't anything that you do that results in, hey, give me a timeout. Oh, let me fix this. No, the fight's over. You quit. So you just do it. You're just like, this sucks. This hurts. I make the most of it. Because you're in that situation. You're in that moment. But it really sucks. I know exactly what Tyron Woodley was feeling. And it can happen to anybody. It has. That's what MMA is. That's why Habib is so special. To have a record like his, it just doesn't happen. In most majority of the sport, everybody takes at least a loss. Because you have that night. The night where you just can't get your mind and body to cooperate. Could be a sickness. Could be a lot of things.
Can you think of a night where that happened and yet you still pulled out a win?
I would say to a degree, anytime the fight goes a little bit longer, some of that starts happening, a little bit of a battle, say, Brandon Vera. The second round, it was like I was kind of like floating around and not really being myself. And then you see a trigger switch in the third round where I snap myself out of it. Same thing happened in the Stefan Struve fight. I was basically, he was coasting to a win. People blame the kicks. Man, rewatch or what a bunch of nonsense. Whatever happened is though, a trigger switch in that last minute 20 was me. Being me, that's how I need to fight. That's when I'm very, very hard to stop.
Well, thank you so much for the question, Cam Kelly. That was a fascinating answer from a professional.
Can we talk about this real quick? Comments. What's his name?
Stephen A. Smith.
Smith knows sports. He goes right away, he rebuttals and says, y'all going to apologize now? Y'all think I'm crazy? But this doesn't line up. When I read that, I go, this doesn't line up with what you originally said, though. What he originally said was far more harsh and not anything related with Cowboy. It wasn't like Steven didn't say, Cowboy doesn't look like he's himself tonight. Steven said, this is an embarrassment, and he quit. I don't think he asked for forgiveness, but dude, you're You're not even talking the same thing. Your first set of comments were an attack. And it wasn't any kind of forgiveness. It wasn't any kind of, hey, Cowboy doesn't look like himself. No, you called him a quitter. And he was saying things like, like a lot of fighters took offense to is, you don't know fighting. And you don't know what it's like to be in that cage. So don't act like you know what it's like to be in the cage. You don't. Until you get in the cage and you understand what that real true pressure is like, having someone across from you that's trying to end you in front of millions of people, it's not like any sport in this entire planet. You have no idea. So to stop trying to pretend like you know. You don't. I respect – he knows football, dude. He's a great speaker of all these other things. But he really – it's why Joe Rogan came at him. And he tries – he doesn't – he seems like the kind of guy that's always right. He's never wrong. He can't be wrong. He's always right about everything. That in itself is a huge human flaw. So good luck with that, buddy. You got to work on that. We're always we all can be wrong. You got to know when you're wrong and learn from it.
I love it. I love it. I am not a Stephen A. Smith fan. I will just put that out there. like Ben said, you know, all respect to the success the guy has. You know, his persona that he's developed that, like, you know, gets the attention that he wants and has furthered his career. That's great. But I totally agree that he's misinformed about a lot of things, especially about MMA, as Ben so eloquently pointed out. And thank you for putting him on blast, because I think that was, honestly, I think that was very necessary. I'm not a fan of the man's comments at all. Honestly, not just in regards to MMA, but that's a whole other thing.
Well, yeah, we actually answered that question. We just got this one.
Yeah, from At the Seaside, with Cowboy saying he wasn't himself fighting McGregor and definitely, quote, didn't bring it in that fight. Is there any way Conor McGregor fights Khabib right after that? So this individual just asking about, would Conor fight Khabib again? I mean, I guarantee he would fight Khabib again. He said it a million times, right? I'm not mistaken, right? He said he's wanted that fight 1,000 times.
Conor?
The rematch. Yeah.
He doesn't want him fighting.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah, it's not. Yeah, not a bold statement there. Yeah,
I do want to ask Ben something that Roxanne Modafari was on this show last episode, and she didn't get to answer this. But someone asked for her input on how fighters view the media and what our roles should be. They asked us what we thought our roles should be, but they wanted a question directly from a fighter. So, as a professional fighter who's done the media days, done the press conferences, done the scrums, done the interviews, how do you view the media's role, and what do you think our role should be?
Exactly what you guys do. It's to spread the word and the knowledge, and to show MMA to everyone, and to talk about it, and to get people interested in it and talk about it. The problem is, it's just like fighters. We're not equal. And one bad media member doesn't speak for all of the media, but people like to do that. Oh, this person did that. All media is bad now. It's such an ignorant way, but people, that's human nature. That's how we've been doing that with everything. You know, one fighter goes out and does something stupid, so all fighters are bad people now. We know that's not true. So media's, it's everything. That's why I've kind of really pulled out the last, you know, 3-4 years from social media for my own personal reasons. But prior to that, I had a lot of fun with it. And always, even back in the IFL days and prior to that, I always try to do media and interviews, because if we don't spread the word, the sport wouldn't grow. And people need to know what's going on. So that's why I've always tried to help you guys out and do the best promoter media.
So you don't subscribe to the fact that fans are blaming the media for the previous cancellation of UFC 249? We've got to, I could tweet like, this is what I had for breakfast today. And someone will tweet me, yeah, well, too bad you're not covering 249. Congratulations. I'm like, I didn't even say anything. I just said this is what I'm having for breakfast.
That social media, people get to say just whatever they want, no matter how much nonsense it is. So there was no blame for 249. It's we're in a pandemic, you know. I mean, you point blame at what? I mean, the NBA canceled the season. When that happened, I told everybody what was happening after. It was the NBA. It's the most. The March is one of their probably It's the month they make so much money. So much money was at stake, and they canceled the season. I go, does anybody understand the magnitude of what's happening right now? So for the UFC to have to cancel a show, it's like, come on.
The Olympics are canceled.
The Olympics are canceled.
Yeah. And that hasn't happened yet. That's still a couple months. It's supposed to be a couple months away. The Olympics are canceled. It's insane.
In fairness, to all the trolls out there, you know, I am a member of the MMA media. I may have retweeted something about COVID-19 back then and before, you know, everything got canceled. And then so I might be responsible. So I am part of the MMA media. Maybe that was my fault that the NBA and the Olympics and everything shut down. I shouldn't have retweeted, that news about COVID-19. I apologize. I just don't understand the power that I and the MMA media have. So I'm very sorry. Ben, for yourself, has there ever been something written about you in the media or one of your, or any story that you like really objected to, kind of those framed, like, whoa, hold on, like that's, you know, maybe I said that, or maybe that's what I did in the fight, but that's not fair the way you put it. Has that ever happened to you?
It happens. I said something that was completely taken out of context or misquoted in a sense. I can't remember. Like I said, it's been a while, and it was, you know, we're probably going back 2014, 2015, and Steve Morocco goes, Ben, stop reading everything. Stay off the internet. Stop reading stuff. Cause I would call him and I'd be mad. I'd be like, why does this person do this and this and that? And he's like, stop reading everything. No, I'm going to keep reading everything. I'm like, go. I'm in the shadow watching you. I know what you're doing. So it's happened. But again, like I said, there's good people, there's bad people. You know, it's just the way it is. Mm-hmm. You can't quit because one person messed up. We got to keep going because for the one bad, there's a whole bunch of guys doing a great job, doing a good thing. And it's why we have fans. Without the media, you know, the fans want to interact. They want to talk. They want to have something involved. That's what you guys do. And it brings life to the sport. So super, you're necessary. You're necessary. That's the way it is.
Yeah, and hey, shout out to the fans as well. Obviously, without the fans, we don't have a job. You know, obviously, the fighters. I know you guys need fans. So definitely, you know, when we joke about trolls and stuff, I still think that's a vocal minority, and I really do think the majority of the fans are just good supportive people when it comes to MMA and supporting media and supporting fighters like Ben.
From @DukeSlosh,
we're all friends. Twitter. Everyone's friends.
Everyone is friends. You've touched on it quickly, but I'm curious to know what you think is more impressive. A one-punch KO or five-round drubbing. As remarkable as it is when McGregor crumpled Aldo, I'd have liked to have seen the rematch to truly answer who was best. So, Ben, what is more impressive, a five-round beatdown or a one-punch KO quickly?
Well, it's like a dual question.
Sure.
Or a dual answer, I'm sorry. There's impressive and there's shocking. Masvidal hitting Askren, it was like both, but the shock factor, and I think Dana White just said it's his all-time high, but I remember watching that fight and my jaw was up, and I could hear in the TV, the arena was like, all the people around me that was watching with me were like, wow. It was impressive at the same time. Then to watch later on that he had set it up, he was practicing it, it's impressive. At the same time, someone that gruels out five rounds in an exciting war, you know, how can you not be impressed with that too? So I really can't say it's one or the other. I'm impressed by so many things when you see things like that happen in the sport. Guys that have the ability, because it's not an accident. You train to have your muscles work that way, to snap that punch just right, to have the accuracy. You know, sure, for the fans watching, like, man, it was only 15 seconds, but it didn't change the fact that I spent 3 months in a training camp. So, yeah, I guess I'm impressed by all of it because I know what goes into it.
And if you're in the UFC, you get that flash knockout. You're probably going home with that $50,000 extra.
Yeah, some extra money doesn't hurt.
You know, Ben uses the words impressive. Like, there's a difference between impressive and shocking. I would add informative. I know that sounds like it's a fight was so informative, but I think there's something to like obviously I'm a big, you know, I'm Canadian, I'm a huge GSP fan. So, you know, take my comments with that perspective. I definitely really appreciate sort of a 5-round championship defense where like the champion shows just how dominant he is, especially against like danger, you know, super dangerous opponents. So for me, I would lean towards a 5-round. I definitely would lean towards dominant 5-round decisions being more quote unquote impressive, or like I said, informative, and kind of letting us know like this guy really is the superior fighter. But like Ben said, shocking is another thing altogether. And certainly when you look at some guys' highlight reels, you can understand why like certain fighters are held in higher esteem than other guys who necessarily always go the distance and things like that. But yeah, I'm on the 5-round side of that discussion.
Thank you for the question, Jose. Duke Sloshy. Alex is frozen.
Oh, no. Am I back?
You're back. Another question from Cam Kelly. Hashtag the A-side. At this day and age, in order to become a top draw in the UFC, do you need the support of a nation? And is that even possible for American fighters? Ireland has Conor, Canada behind GSP, etc. However, most U.S. fighters' support seems to only go city/statewide. So interesting question. It does remind me of the comments that Chris Weidman made when it seemed he fought like Anderson, Machida, Belfort. He was fighting all these Brazilians back-to-back-to-back-to-back, and Brazil would really travel to where the fights were happening. And he himself said, if I go fight overseas, America's not following me, but Brazil will follow their fighters. So, Ben, do you have any thoughts on this? Have you noticed opponents that you fight can bring their nation over, but say you go fight overseas like you did JDS? The state of Wisconsin's probably not following you overseas, right?
Right. Yeah, that's the advantage or the international fighters can get. They can get a country behind them. You see it in Ireland. We'll just use Conor McGregor. They like didn't have anything to be excited about. All of a sudden you got the UFC putting them on a platform, and you see the whole country will get behind a guy or girl. And it just, they become very proud. They have something to be supportive of. And the United States doesn't work that way. Nobody gives a shit. And You gotta really rise to the top in the United States to kind of, you gotta get the world behind you, really. You gotta get the attention of everybody. And even then, I don't think you're gonna have people flying out to you. You'll just get them to buy the pay-per-view. John Jones he's done some things outside of fighting. He still has a ton of fans. And say those things didn't happen, regardless, I don't think a whole bunch of people are flying. If he even did fight internationally, I don't think a whole bunch of people fly over to see him. I don't. It's just how we are. People walk by the people. And in the other countries, it's like they really get behind it. And it is impressive. And it's like, I don't know if it's a soccer thing or if it's just because of the way the other countries don't have anything else. But they really get into it. It's like their thing to get into. And the UFC loves it because look at the pay-per-view buys for that country explode. So that's why the international market has become so big for them, because of that happening. People get behind a fighter, and it's impressive. It's definitely something that I have to, as an American fighter, yeah, it's tough. You got to fight against that. You're fighting
against that
whole nation.
Well, is that something you could take advantage of? Like you could basically become a bigger deal to, like, you beat their guy, they're going to remember you. Like, could you use it as to your advantage? Like, say the U.S. doesn't get behind you. You go to, like, say Aldo went to Ireland and crumpled him.
I went to Ireland. I didn't even get to fight. I just hung out with people there. And, man, so much support from Ireland now. The people are awesome. They are that – dude – Conor McGregor got it made, man, because that country's awesome. They get behind you. And, you know, I'm a bit Irish, but, you know, I'm not from there. And just being nice, just being there doing autographs and hanging out with everybody, dude, they're awesome. And so you can win them over. You got to go there and you got to fight for them. You got to be nice. You got to be a nice person. You got to be somebody for them to get behind. But it can happen.
I think we have a question about that, right, Casey? About Ben in Dublin?
Ben in Dublin?
Or Ireland?
I don't see it, but you can ask him.
I think there was a fan asked, like, before this pandemic, were you trying to get on that Dublin card that was supposed to be in August? Because yeah, first of all.
Well, he said, he just said he was nice. He's like, Ben was really nice. So there you go.
There you go.
That's my point. All
right. Another question from Cam Kelly, hashtag the A-side. Do you think the UFC could be more popular amongst casuals if UFC fighters were paid more and able to be to live more luxurious / A-list celebrity lifestyles?
I don't think so. I'm not a fashion guy, and I think it's a lot of hoopla.
Yeah. What are you wearing today, Ben? What's your fashion?
No, who are you wearing?
Who are you wearing, Ben?
Rothwell. There you go. Oh, that's he's nice. Wearing Rothwell.
Oh, honey.
I think sorry guys if I'm breaking up a little bit. I think the question makes more sense if it's more asked like, you know, if you didn't have to worry about you know, certain, like, I think worrying about financials is might be an issue for some fighters. I don't know. So if you could just focus solely on training, and if you were so well taken care of and so well compensated that you could just solely focus on training, do you think more fighters, do you think it would improve the, you know, the quality of fighters overall?
Well, it's tough to say. I think it's individual because I can't tell people how to spend their money, but I know guys that have made a lot more money than I do. And they don't have what I have now that time's went by. I own a gym. I told you I have a 700 square foot training facility that I turned my garage. Okay, so I don't get to park cars in a garage. But let me tell you, during all of this, it's really nice to walk 5 feet out and have everything I need. And I know guys that are making complaints about not having a place to train, but I'm like, wait a minute, you've made a lot more money than me. Nobody stopped you from making a gym. So it doesn't matter. If you give people the money, they're going to spend it however.
Yeah.
And I was still figuring out ways to do my, you know, have better training, take care of my trainers, to have stuff. So, you know, you can't deny that if we give more money, could the guys like me have better training, do better? Of course. I just don't see it with a lot of guys because I think they're still going to blow the money on whatever. You give them more money, that's more money for them to go blow on the stupid shit they were going to go do anyway. So it's hard to say. You know, we all want more money, but what you going to do with the money, who knows?
Yeah.
Well, we're up on time, Case. Do we have any more questions for Mr. Rothwell
before we let him go? No, we just had kind of general questions about MMA stuff, but nothing for Ben. Like, I think we've answered most of the fun ones. But Alex, you have any more questions?
Well, one thing I wanted to see those. I don't know. Can we see one of those swords, Ben? I don't know those swords. I have it, right? I mean, sorry for people who are just listening. We'll try to describe the swords later when they listen. But for YouTubers, please enjoy this.
So this is a folded blade, actually. This was kind of hard to get. You can see the Hammond. So that's where they put the clay. See the wavy lines?
Mm-hmm.
See, they put clay, and it's a differential when they do. It's a heat treatment. So this is actually the old, you know, this was done the old way. This sword was made in Holland, but it was done in the old Japanese way, and it's not easy to get and come by, but... So when they did is they put clay and see when they got this metal super hot, they quench it. It creates that's what creates the difference in the steel. And that's where you can see where the metal is. So what it does is it makes this back part very flexible and then the blade is very hard. If it was all one type, it would shatter. So that's a little bit about samurai swords. This is one I'm proud of. Super sharp. I'll cut a pig in half.
Jesus.
I don't know why I used a pig. I just thought about hanging up a pig and cutting it in half for some reason. So this is one of them. Got another
couple. How many are up there?
I got four of them up here.
You have names for them?
Well, this one was named. Yeah, there it goes. There's the kanji. You see the kanji? There's my camera.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. We see it, yeah.
There it is.
Perfect.
So this is the Demon Warblade.
Whoa. Jesus. It's no joke, guys. You thought Ben Rothwell couldn't be any more dangerous. You didn't even know. You guys didn't know. Ben, we did want to ask, because, you know, you will be fighting in Jacksonville. What have you heard sort of about safety precautions? Have you been tested? Have they told you when you might get tested? What's the kind of the general picture there regarding COVID-19 stuff ahead of fight week?
They sent the email yesterday. It says when we arrive, they're going to be tested. And mm-hmm. we test each day we're there. From my best of my knowledge, the hotel is completely like bought by the UFC for this period of time. So there'll be no public there. You have to wear a credential apparently just to be on the hotel grounds. And they're not allowing anyone outside of licensed people to be there. So see when we get there.
So you feeling all right about it?
I do. From my word, I'm going to fly now because I heard the airports are safer than a gas station. So,
How many
more people in Walmart right now than the airport?
How many people are coming with you to Jacksonville, Ben?
Three corners.
Three corners.
I mean, that's the average.
Well, any more questions, Casey, from either you, Alex, or YouTube, Twitter, Facebook?
I just better hurry up, man. I don't do this often.
Oh, yeah. My
first interview this year. I only did one last year, so
we know,
it's exclusive.
We got a couple requests for the laugh, but
oh yes,
I don't want to. Ben's not. He's not a jukebox. You know, I can't just tell him to laugh for me, but. I want it to come natural.
He's not a circus freak.
Yeah.
You don't just order him to.
Freak. Peace today.
But I just gotta say, Ben, I miss. I love watching you fight. I love. I think when you fought Josh Burnett, when you did your jig in the for the open workouts in the ring I was like, I don't understand. This guy's a star. He can dance. He can drop promos. He can fight. And I think you're the whole package, Ben Rothwell. That's what I'm just saying.
I appreciate it. We got to get back in action, man. I've had some time off, and I went through hell, but I came out the other side, and here I am. So let's make the most of this last couple years I got.
Yeah. Hey, if people want to see him, the Ben Rothwell laugh or the Ben Rothwell jig or whatever new move he plans to break out, May 13th, right? Well, we'll see
after Wednesday May 13th. Night. Tune in May 13th.
Against Ovin St. Preux. Now, before we let you go, is there anything else you want to say to our listeners or fans or anyone else out there?
I just appreciate everyone. You know, I really appreciate the fans. Any of the fans that have met me, you know it. I smile when I take pictures and, you know, feel free. I don't see much on social media, but I'll check it out. So if you guys got questions and things you want to ask me, just hit my Twitter handle, you know, hit it up on Instagram, and I'll try to get back to you. So, you know, like you said, we're here because of the fans. So you guys come first. You're the reason we get to do this. It'll be sad. It'll be sad to not hear your roar in the arena, but I'll do my best to imagine at your homes freaking out, because that's the kind of show I want to give you.
Well said. I don't think we can top that promo right now. But of course, this is Jose. That was Alex. That was Casey. Thank you so much, Ben, for joining us this Friday, the first episode of May, especially because he's in fight camp right now. You can find us on Stitcher, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, all of the podcasts. But until then, we'll see you on Monday. We're out.
Listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.